Hey, 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 Soul Tribe. Welcome back. This is episode 1.14 of Beyond Deconstructing. I'm your host, T. Jamaica Pogue, affectionately known as Deconstructing Neuro. Thank you guys so much for coming back and spending a little bit of time with me today. On today's episode, I am so excited for you guys to meet the founder and one of the premier members of the Neural Spicy Network, Desenia. And as always, you guys, you know, I'm going to stop flapping my gums and turn it over to my guests to introduce themselves. So Desenia, please take it away.
Oh, thank you. My name is Desenia. I started the Neural Spicy Networking group, and it has grown exponentially since then, and it's amazing. But there's still so much I want to do, right? So I'm excited to be here, and thank you for inviting me. So I want to talk about a little bit about how I found out I was autistic, because it's part of my story, and it, oh my God, it just changed my world so much to finally have that information. It has unlocked everything, and like my life is so much better now. So I grew up in Miami. I am Hispanic. My parents are both from Venezuela, and they came here. They came here on vacation and got stuck here. And so, like, you know, first generation, there's so many intersectionalities. It would, you know, take me hours to get through them all. But I, you know, had a large family. We didn't have a lot of community, but we tried to make the community that we could while we were there. But we moved around a lot because we didn't have a lot of housing stability, food insecurity, you know, all of the things that you hear about happening happened to me. So when you're impoverished and in a new place. And I have five brothers and a sister. They all had like assessments through the schools where they found out that they had some kind of what we're now calling the umbrella of neurodiversity, right? But I was the kid that was like, oh, nobody, we don't need to worry about Desenia. She's great. She's doing fine. And all the while I was struggling internally and had no idea why, you know. And of course it was the being raised in a patriarchal society with a patriarchal culture on both sides of my culture, right? The American side and the Hispanic side. And you know, it was really frustrating because I, with the autistic PDA profile, I fought against it all the way. Like I was arguing full sentences, like very eloquent speeches at 4 years old with full grown ass adults. Mm-hmm. You could not tell me nothing. Like you took me to church and tried to tell me something. And I was like, why did they say this, but you do that? And they were like, well, honey. And you know, my mom was very gracious, always trying to explain things to me. And my father was absolutely authoritarian and was like, no, nothing. No, you believe and that's it. Right. And so I was just like, well, then I don't believe. Goodbye. And from a very young age, just fighting against all of the systems of inequity. Right. And that never went away. It got suppressed and I got treated very shittily because of it. I didn't know why. And I would struggle. I would try to make friends. You know, it's a typical thing where I was always friends with the adults. And I couldn't make friends with the kids. Like the kids didn't want me around, but the adults barely put up with me either. You know, there was one or two that really like cared about me, and then the rest, and I'm talking about outside of my family in the school system, you know. But it's just interesting. I can go into this forever, so I'm going to move forward. you know, I was a kid who was very much driven by the desire to learn more. So I was always looking for something to do in the summers after school. Like I could not have enough knowledge. Like I was reading books like you wouldn't believe. I couldn't get enough information. There was always more to be had. And this is pre-internet days, right? So I was in the library all the time, or as much as I could be. And then I was, you know, riding the bus and exploring the city. By the time I was in middle school, I was, you know, on my own running around doing things like going to swim team or doing, going to the library. But I still, no matter how many times I attempted to make friends, nobody was interested in anything. They didn't want anything to do with me unless there was something that they could extract from me. So I became hyper aware of that extractive process and that transactional thing. And as soon as I realized someone was trying to use me for anything, that was it, and cut ties. And so, you know, people were like, oh, you just don't give people a chance and you just don't this, that, and the third. And I was like, you know what? I just don't put up with abuse. That's what it is. And so I will not, and goodbye. Right. And I came in, I live, grew up in an abusive household. So that I could not escape, but there was nobody going to throw more abuse on me if I had anything to do with it. But anyway, so I went and looked for, I got really into sciences. I looked for summer internships in middle school and high school. I would take like 2-hour bus rides just to get to the school. And then, or I would ride my bike. At one point I was riding my bike like 60 miles each day just to go to an internship when I was doing that at the University of Miami during college. But yeah, I got my degree in biochem. I wanted to be a doctor, but then I learned about the system and how things work. And I was like, oh, this is very, very, very toxic. I am not going to do that. And so I was like, I got to find something else in the sciences to do. So I switched to biochem, environmentalism. I couldn't decide which one. So environmental science or biochemistry. So I picked biochemistry, but I was like on the fence for both. And that's what I did after college. I did a bunch of internships. Of course, I graduated around the time the recession happened, so couldn't find a job anywhere. I couldn't even get a waitressing job. I had to lie and said I was straight out of high school just to get a waitressing job because they wouldn't take me with anything that was my actual resume, right? But being autistic and having EDS, like I still looked like I was straight out of high school at the end of college. So yeah, so I did sciences. I did a lot of different things for 10 years, I think. And time, I have time blindness too, so time is kind of meaningless to me. But I did work at a national park. I worked for the USGS. I did surveying. I did field work in the Everglades. You know, I did scuba diving and restoring coral reefs. I did atmospheric research. I did a whole lot of things. I was just like trying to find my place in the world, right? In the sciences. But like many places, they used my labor, gave me pittance, and then send me on my way. Like I didn't realize, and no one took me under their wing to teach me that these internships were meant to be building relationships. I was taking it as this is an opportunity to learn the process, the science, the information was what I was learning, right? The experience, but no one was like, oh, you have to talk to the people too. And I did. I talked to people, but they didn't like me. And I couldn't figure out why. No one liked me. I was a know-it-all, a pain in the ass. I talked too much, you know, whatever excuses they gave me. And you know, most of the, you know, that gets to you after a while, but I was still very confident. I was like, well, you're all just wrong. And I'm delightful, and I have no idea why you just don't get that. So, but I just kept living and going on my way, you know. And after a while, you know, going on 10 years in the sciences and in my career, I moved up in my last science job. I moved up very quickly up the ranks and was on track to become the lab manager. And then I was just like, I can't do this for the rest of my career. I would be not only everybody's manager, I would be the youngest person here, one of the very few females, and definitely the only person of color managing a bunch of people who were not interested in being managed by somebody this young and with all of my intersectionalities. And I was like, this sounds like a disaster, even though it was a great career move. I just said no and quit, gave up. Pivoted and for like another, did the same searching for a job for a long time. Anyway, I'm getting bogged down into my details of my career. Let me fast forward to
no, girl. Trust me, I can relate, and a lot of other people can relate, but
a lot of things happened. I pivoted to data analytics. I did data analytics for a while, a bunch of different industries, and then now I'm in healthcare. And I'm like, I don't want to do data analytics anymore. So now I'm actually trying to pivot into DEI. But that's a whole conversation for maybe later today, but we'll see. I when we got to the pandemic, part of my training as a biochemist was learning about pandemics. And so I definitely saw what was going to happen when I started hearing news about it. I tried to warn people who listened to me, only half listened to me. And then, you know, months later, they were like, oh, I should have listened to you. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, I studied this. I tried to tell you. But yeah, it's still frustrating up to today when people are still like, well, the pandemic's over and, you know, I have a vaccine or I don't believe in the vaccine, whatever it is, they're just not believing. And I almost don't blame them because it's like the information that was given, the PR, the system, the way everything happened and rolled out, even though I anticipated and saw what was going to happen, it was still very frustrating to see that. You know, all of these organizations that were supposed to be there to protect us didn't and still aren't, right? It's very frustrating. And I can get into that later. But when the pandemic happened, I got very depressed. And but luckily, they finally decided that mental health was going to be covered by insurance. So I finally got access to mental health services and started seeing a therapist, unbeknownst to me. Also neurodivergent at the time, and they just clocked me right away. But they were like, they apparently, and I don't know if this is true or not, but they're not supposed to tell you that. So I was just like, what? You mean what? They're like, well, I think that this might be something we want to talk about. And I was just like, okay, but they said they couldn't diagnose me, so I would have to go and get diagnosis. But it was like the thing that just clicked into place when they told me, I think you might have autism. And I was just like, what is that? What is that even? Right? Like, I had no idea. I had heard about it because I knew that there were anti-vaxxers who said that they think that the vaccines cause autism, which I had just like immediately rejected that thought. But other than that, I didn't really know what autism was. So then I, of course, autistically went on a deep dive into autism. And at first I was like, this doesn't sound right. It doesn't really match with my experience. It doesn't, nothing's really clicking here. So, and this is from what I was reading on the internet. So then I was like, let me turn to TikTok, you know, let me hear from people who know they're autistic and what is their lived experience. And then all of a sudden, boom, 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 everything started to line up. And I was like, me too, me too, me too, me too. All of a sudden, I was just like, oh, this has to be it. And then now that I knew the keywords and I knew what to search for, now I could go and really dive in and find out what was out there and what was available. And I have become like an advocate ever since. And this is what has led me to all of the amazing projects that I'm on now. And I'm excited to make, you know, create more in the future. But that was my very long-winded journey to finding out I was autistic.
Oh my goodness. No, I thank you. And I appreciate you sharing your journey with us because, well, firstly, there you touched on so many things that I want to expand upon. But I always, always love hearing the different stories and the different journeys of how we came to the same conclusion, because it's very important for me to break down the stereotypes and the false assumptions and this one, what I call the face of autism, that people just assume if they have heard of autism, they've only heard of it in one certain way and how it presents, which is, I'm sure, part of the reason why when you first heard about it and you did the preliminary research, it didn't click with you because it wasn't based on people like you and I. It was based on young, white, affluent, cishet males. And we are literally like, if you could be on the polar opposite end, that's where you have a highly intersectional women of color. And so, yes, it's super, super important to hear the lived experiences of other people, because if you're actually autistic, you're an authority in a way that even someone who has studied autism clinically or studied it in school isn't. And so that's such a great, great point. But actually earlier, what I wanted to circle back to when you were talking about when you were in your career and kind of rising through the ranks, or even a little bit before that, when you were in a situation where you thought you were there to learn, and then you found out later that it was more about the networking and building relationships. Girl, I almost flew out of my chair because I had the same experience. That actually was how I started to realize that I'm autistic, was because I moved from being an individual contributor in a customer service environment to getting a support role. I was a support specialist for the vice president of one of the biggest departments in my former company. And because of that, I worked directly under him and alongside like the directors and upper management and things like that. So I took that position because I thought that it was going to be a great opportunity for me to learn a different side of the business, learn the operation, bring my experience from customer service to this side to help inform them on ways they can make processes better so that our customers would be happier. But I was ostracized. I was demonized. I was considered rude, arrogant. Just all of these negative things were put on me because I didn't participate in the social aspects of being in that environment. Like, I thought that these invitations were literal and not like, like I thought I had a choice in not going out to lunch or not going to happy hour or anything like that. But apparently by me turning down some manager's invitation to have lunch, I was seen as arrogant and rude. Or because I wore headphones at my desk, I was considered to be rude because I didn't want to sit there and talk, or I didn't care to overhear other people's conversations. I just wanted to do my work. And I think that's super important because a lot of these companies, they like to spout, especially after the things that happened in 2020 with George Floyd and Black Lives Matter coming more to the forefront. A lot of these major corporations started flooding money to their DE&I budget so that they can get ahead and be seen as like, oh, we're staying with the times. But they don't act, it's all performative, because firstly, it only focuses usually on maybe race and maybe sexism, but disabilities, whether visible or invisible, they don't even worry about that. And when you try to bring it up, you're like, at least in my experience, it's like, oh, well, you want something for nothing, or you're complaining about something that's not actually an issue. But no, like, why would I advocate for something for myself that I don't actually need just to like be a spoiled brat? But that's how they see us, because autistic people in neurotypical culture is all about manipulative, transactional, like you were saying earlier. And it's just so freaking frustrating.
It really is. Disability is always an afterthought, right? Like, we can't be more than one thing. Like, the intersection of all of these things in my life make me who I am, make me the asset that I am to your company. But if you can't give me the accessibility and the tools that I need to thrive in this situation, what do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to leave. And that is why there's so much attrition in every company. And that is why this big push to go back to the office or go back to the way things were, is because everyone wants to reset to the way that it's back to the time and a place that doesn't exist anymore. It never did. It was artificial, and that bubble has popped, and they haven't accepted that reality yet, right? But if you can't make things accessible for the most marginalized person at your company, in your space, then you are making it so that nobody gets access except the people you choose. And that's the quiet part that they're finally starting to say out loud, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want to acknowledge that, no, they're not actually trying to make this an inclusive place. They're just trying to appear inclusive so that they can continue to profit off of the labor of neurotypical people, neurodivergent people. And we come in all sizes and colors and shapes, right? We have all kinds of specialized and generalized skills. You know, the master, what's that phrase again? The jack of all trades, master of none is better than a master of one. And, you know, people never finish that phrase and that thought. And it's really frustrating to people like us, because we're like, we know the full phrase, and nobody wants to keep the conversation going, right? They only want to use the piece that works for them and throw away the rest.
Yeah.
Which is very, very typical of, you know, living in a capitalist society. So everything's about extraction. Everything is about how we're colonizing our lives. We're being colonized every day by the systems that exist and have been in place to make the most wealthy profitable or to make the business profitable. It's all about the business. And I'm like, okay, yeah, but who makes that business run? People. If you don't make a people-centered world, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, yeah, you're going to go with the momentum that you've existed for so long, but eventually it's going to stop. And people are tired of, people are becoming aware of all of this and are like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore. And therefore you see all of the attrition, you see all of the people like not willing to put up with the abuse anymore. Well, we've been abused for so long. That's just the way things are. No.
But that doesn't mean that it's right just because that's the way things have been. And oh my God, you make such a great point. Like we get seen or we get called quiet quitters or we get labeled these entitled brats because we are finally saying the quiet part out loud and being like, hey, just because this is what you've come to expect and there's so many people who are willing to just go with the system, I'm not willing to do that. I'm going to challenge it. I'm going to ask why we're doing this because it doesn't make any sense. And your answer of, well, this is just how things are done is not a good enough answer. It's not an actual explanation as to why we continue to have systems in place that don't benefit anyone other than the very few at the top. And like, I swear, I go on many rants about corporate America at this point because that was rants. Yes, I mean, like that to me has been like the biggest system of, it helped me being in that environment to realize who I am. But because of that, I am now like so mad and angry that I put up with it for so long and didn't realize how much I was being exploited. Because to me, I'm like a people pleaser. I'm working through those people pleasing tendencies. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'll just go in, I'll work hard. I was thinking literally about the dream that they sell us. Like if you come to work and you work hard and you do X, Y, and Z, you'll make it. And now that I realize that it doesn't matter how hard you work, it's more about your reputation and if the people at the top like you. There's so many people that spend their lives, whether they're neurodivergent or not, spend their lives feeding into the system just to not get anything back. But then when you have somebody challenge it, they've given so much of themselves to it. It's kind of like that sunk cost fallacy. Yeah, it's like, well, I've given 20, 30, 40 years of my life to this. How dare you, not want to follow in my footsteps? Like, I don't know. I feel like there's so many people who, I know there's so many people who look at me at least and think that I'm crazy because similar to you in your previous position, I was at my old job for a little under 6 years and I had 5 positions. My last position was a leadership role, like one step below being a manager. And the fact that I was questioning things and that I was openly expressing my confusion and that I wasn't happy made people look at me like, why don't you just shut up? You have it all. You got this position that so many other people wanted and why are you making waves? Because it's not right. I don't care that I have this title. This title means nothing to me if what I'm doing or what is being done to me is not right.
No, I interrupted you. I say that we are the canaries in the coal mine because we don't care about hierarchies. We care about human rights, right? And that sense of justice can be twisted and can pull people into the white supremacy pipeline, the new age spirituality to white supremacy pipeline. And they pull a lot of autistic people in because they use logic circles and rhetoric to get them in there. But in the end, what I feel like is happening is that we just will not put up with being abused. But we've been so baked in the stew of abuse that we just assume that that is the way that the world has been this whole time. And it's not true. You know, if you look back to Native American or indigenous cultures of any kind, we were living great until colonization came around, right? I mean, we lived with the land. We had social structures in place to deal with issues that came up because we are social creatures and we are human beings. We are animals. We are beings on this planet that need to be maintained and taken care of. And when you put it into a system that is all extractive and no nurturing, what do you think is going to happen? You're going to start killing everything off, which is what we're living through right now. And this idea that the over, you know, the lie, the myth of the overpopulation is the reason that we're here. No, we're here because of a colonization and extractive mindset. And we can reverse that. Will it be back to the way things were? Probably not, but it's not going to be the end of the world. And this doom and gloom is another form of another tool to keep us apathetic, to keep us hopeless, to keep us so tired and exhausted that we don't act, that we don't do, that we don't behave in ways that change the world, right? We can change the world. We need to rebuild our communities. And that is essentially the answer to everything is go connect to your community. If you're feeling lost and alone, find a community. If you're feeling hopeless and helpless, find a community. You want to change the world, find a community. And don't just think that you can do it yourself, right? You can, but people are already and have been working towards this. You know, yeah. Black women and Black communities have been working towards this for a long time. Go find the people who are doing it already and join them.
You're exactly right. The capitalism, the colonial mindset, colonization has bred this hyper individualism that keeps a lot of people in competition with each other, not realizing that by us being in competition with each other, we're not pooling our resources, pooling our knowledge. And this is what they want, because if we are only looking out for ourselves, and if the system keeps us desperate and dependent on it, there is and has been a lot of pushback when you try to present an alternate perspective, because a lot of people can't think outside of the paradigm that is presented to them. It's like, oh, well, I was born into capitalism. My parents were born into capitalism, and so were my grandparents. And this is just how things are. And if I am willing to shut down the parts of myself that doesn't feel right in the system to get in where I fit in, then how dare you, neural spicy person, have the audacity to stand up and be like, hey, well, I get that this is how things are done, but it doesn't have to be this way. And I feel like that is one of, if not the biggest hurdles when it comes to the kind of work that you and I do, is that we're coming from a place of pure logic, and it's objective logic too, because these are things that are factual and that can be proven historically, that working as a community, being more in tune with nature and ourselves has been sustainable for longer than capitalism has been around, actually. But again, like you said, we've been so baked in the stew. This has been ingrained in us, especially in Western cultures, that no, this is what you're supposed to aspire to. And if you're not reaching for that specific goal, you're crazy. And we're just going to chew you up and spit you out, extract from you what we can, and then leave you for dead, and leave you on your own. And I just wish that more people would understand that, like, just because it's different doesn't mean that it's wrong. And to kind of like turn off that cognitive dissonance filter that so many people just let new information that challenges their core beliefs just bounce off it and they double down. Like, that's what we're up against. We're up against people who fully believe in colonial mindset, in capitalism, in all of the isms that are, you know, directly derived from colonization. And you, as soon as you challenge it, they just double down, even if it doesn't make any logical sense. And sometimes I feel like I'm banging my head against the fucking wall, because it's like, I can't explain this any clearer than what I just said. And I'm saying objective truths, but people just won't receive it that way. And then don't even get me started on groupthink. If somebody with a bigger title or higher in the hierarchy has their voice and says, oh, well, this person is crazy, it doesn't matter if somebody below them internally feels like, I resonate with what they're saying, they're still just going to be like, well, actually, I mean, even though I feel like this person is right, this person said they're wrong, so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and not challenge anything. And it's right. It's frustrating.
It's insidious. But we have a couple of things that a couple of things came up while you were talking. And first of all, I love that we are just like, let me rant, then you rant, then I rant. Right? Because like, I wanted to, like, I'm working on not interrupting you, because, you know, if a couple of years ago, I would have just been like, and like what you said to this and what you said to that. And it's hilarious. So anyway, it's insidious that we have this, like, the rhetoric has taught people to shut down when you hear these words, shut down and say this back, right? And there's no, and they've internalized it and they believe it. So there's no point where they're in this loop and they're not stopping to think, hey, is what I'm saying make sense? Does it actually match with what I believe? They just have already incorporated into their core belief system. So there's no desire to ask questions about their core belief system, right? And that's understandable, right? Like if you're asking me to check my core beliefs, I'm going to be like, well, my core beliefs are my core beliefs. Why would I be checking on them? But that's what you're supposed to do. That's what we need to do. We need to check on ourselves and check on each other. And that is not what we are being taught, right? That's what we've all been indoctrinated into, believe this. And if someone tells you that this is wrong, they're wrong and act this way. And this is, it's scripted. It's been taught to us generationally. It's mm-hmm. already there. So breaking all of that down is going to be very hard, but it's not hopeless, because if you look into long canvassing, it's all about finding the common ground with people. But then it's like, it comes back to whose job is it to bring those people along? And it's definitely not us, right? It's not my job to bring people along, because I'm already exhausted. I'm already tired. I'm already disabled. Like my job is to rest. My job is to recover from all this trauma and heal myself. And then use that to help build community. Like even though I'm resting, I'm still trying to be in community. So there's a lot that I still need to learn. But what comes down to is that people are hurting, and they are in a world where they feel like if I don't claw all of these things towards myself, someone else is going to claw them away from me. It's a very mm-hmm. scarcity mindset, right? And that is essentially what we've all grown up with. So to unlearn that, to decolonize your mind, takes a lot of introspection that people aren't comfortable with. I mean, you know, we are not even taught how to feel emotions, much less how to process them. And us being neurospicy, like we have to be given explicit instructions on how to feel our emotions, how to identify our emotions, how to understand facial expressions. Like if you're lucky and if you're neurodivergent, you're more likely have family that is also neurodivergent. And if you're lucky enough to have grown up in a family that either knew that they were neurodivergent or accepted that neurodivergence, you had parents who were teaching you, this is a happy face, this is a sad face. And the tone changed, right? And you're being taught that as a kid. So then you learn the rules of being in a society and behaving in the ways that our society has structured itself. But if you grew up in a family that was trying to conform to all the rules and not teaching your kids all of the rules of how to emote, how to understand what our bodies are telling us, how to understand what we're feeling, the history, the true history of what's been happening to us, how could they have taught us? They were taught the lie too, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's just this huge cycle. So going back to my point was, people are hurting and they don't know how to find the answer. So they look for wherever community will accept them. And unfortunately, the community that is accepting the most people are the ones that are willing to be the most hateful.
Oh, goodness. Yes. You, woo, girl. Abso-freaking-lutely. Because when we get to our core nature as people, it is not to be to see everyone else as your enemy or anyone outside of your immediate in-group as your enemy. But that mindset, the more people adopt that mindset, the better they are in this society, because they're perpetuating this idea that there's only a few people that can succeed. So I have to do whatever I can, even if it literally means stepping on the person next to me or below me, to get to where I want to go so that I can have it all. And that is literally contrary to how most of human existence has been. Like what we were saying earlier, community is so important, but there is no real push for community in this society outside of religion. And even yeah. that is a tool used to keep people in a box, to keep them not thinking for themselves, to keep them from questioning things. Like, I don't know about your religious background, but I grew up Christian. And there's like, you can't question it. Like, I think of the church just like I think of corporate America. They have the same hierarchy. They have the same politics. It's like, oh, the pastor, his word is infallible. And if you question anything that they say, then you don't believe, or you're trying to be in the center. And there's cliques within the church. If you have a title, if you're on if you are the leader of this ministry, then you're this, that, and the other. And it's literally the same thing. Same shit, different toilet. And once I realized that, that's what made me want to leave the church, because I was like, what you say is not what you practice. You say that we are all welcome as we are, but as I am is someone who questions things that don't make any logical sense. So you don't accept me because me questioning these illogical things that you're saying, or these contradictions, makes you see me as somebody who thinks I'm better than everybody else, or someone who doesn't believe hard enough. And it's like, and I only sought community in the church as I got older, because I felt so alone and because I felt so lost. In my early to mid 20s, I was depressed and kind of suicidal. Not kind of, I was suicidal. I don't know why I just like put a buffer on that. Like, I can be honest about it. And it was mainly
because around it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm still working through it. But like, yeah, then you saw that it was like that inadvertent thing to kind of like try to make it softer. I was suicidal in my mid-20s. And I was drawn to the church because I needed community. And at first, they were very reaffirming. They're like, oh, we got you. Like, come in. We love you. And I'm learning all this stuff about how, you know, I'm accepted and blah, blah, blah. But it was all rhetoric. Because again, once I got into corporate America, I wanted to join in ministry because I wanted to be a part of this. I wanted to give back and serve because I was getting so much from it. And once I got into the politics of the church, I realized, wow, like, y'all don't actually practice what you preach, or you say these things, but y'all are over in the corner gossiping and literally excluding me from things while I'm sitting in the same room with you. Like, people talking about planning
the harm that you're going to do to other people as a social event.
Right. It's insanity. Wow.
It is. But this is why, you know, you're right. I mean, religious, I grew up, they were trying to force me into Roman Catholicism. I immediately rejected it as soon as I was in it. Right. But I still had to go. I was still forced to go to church, and I sang in church choir. Did I believe a word they were saying? Absolutely not. I was dissociated most of the time I was in there. But I love to sing. So I was just like, look, I get to go do the thing I like, and then I can use it as an excuse to get away from the things that I don't want to do, like communion and sitting and going to Bible study and all of this bullshit that I didn't believe in. So I was like, sorry, I can't go. I have to go to choir practice, right? And yeah, all the songs are about religious stuff, but I didn't care. I was singing, and I was singing with the community, and I was accepted, right? Everyone's always looking for acceptance. They're looking for love. They're looking for compassion. They're looking for care. Everybody's care. This whole thing that, you know, it's childish to want and need things. We are beings that need to be watered and fed for the entirety of our existence. We don't just stop needing food and water and air to exist. So why do we think we need to stop wanting things or needing things like care and love and attention? So yeah. The people are desperate for this, and they look to religion. And then you have all of these people who are the mass exodus of religions, because they're seeing the toxicity. They're seeing the same thing that they're seeing from corporate America. They're seeing the same things that they're seeing from their toxic families. And they want to leave it. So they're looking for something. They're looking for something. And then they find New Age spirituality, and they're like, oh, good, this is a thing I can find community in. But then there's that pipeline ready to pull people back into another cult or another system or another tool of hierarchical control. And it's just very frustrating, because like, I am a scientist, and I'm also a very spiritual person, and science tried to pull me away from my spirituality. And when I came back to it, I was like, these two are the same. The two, science and spirituality, are two sides of the same coin. And neurodivergent people understand that so much more thoroughly than anybody else, because we have all of these neurodiversities like synesthesia and pattern recognition and all of these other, you know, dyslexia, dyscalculia, like you can just name 50 different things that go under neurodiversity, and they all fall into the reasons that we see and perceive the world differently. And literally, I say this all the time, we do live in the multiverse because every single individual human on this planet lives in their own world. They can only perceive the world through their own experiences. And so every single one of us is a universe. And every universe is a reality, because if we think it, you don't become, the world doesn't, it just happen. We have to think it, we have to dream it, and then we build it. That's how every building has come into existence. That's how every book has ever been written. And that is how we come to create the future we want to see.
Girl, I literally, you about to send me out of my chair and just floating into the ether. Like, you hit on so much there that, like, I could spend hours on, but I definitely want to expand a little bit on there. I love how you said that science and spirituality are two sides of the same coin. And that's a very hard concept for a lot of holistic people to understand, because again, they compartmentalize so many things and they don't have the pattern recognition, or I like to call it spiderweb thinking, where we can see things that seem on the surface to be disparate, but as soon as you go one layer beneath the surface, you see, oh, well, it may look different on the surface, but the same motivations or the same underlying thing connects it all. And I think that that is another reason why so many of us, women, especially when we're early on our journey to discovering our neurodivergence, get sucked into that new age spirituality, because a lot of the things that we may not have been able to explain about ourselves beforehand, if someone tells you that, oh, well, before I knew it was pattern recognition, I thought I was psychic, because I was like, I just know things. I just understand intrinsically. I can look at it and very quickly assess that, oh, this is just like this. Or because of how the pattern works, I know this is going to happen, or this person is going to react this way. And because I didn't know that I was autistic, I went into spirituality, and I still am a spiritual person. I have tarot decks, oracle decks, a bunch of crystals. I'm wearing my crystals now. Like, these are things that I learned to integrate now. But at one point, before I understood that I'm autistic, I really was diving into that, like, I am psychic and I am, you know, starseed and all these other things. And there's nothing wrong with that, because I feel like I still call myself a little witchy poo. I'm a little witchy, right? But I think it's important that we understand that they are two sides of the same coin, and that they're not separate, that there are these spiritual and these esoteric concepts have a basis in reality and can be proven scientifically and empirically. And that's a very important conversation that I actually haven't been seeing a lot of people have, because a lot of the people that are, you know, on TikTok or whatever, that are kind of starting these new cults or these new followings, they're taking advantage of the fact that a lot of people are seeking that community, but they've already come to the conclusion that they can't find it in the traditional ways. So they're like, oh, well, you know, I get that you were hurt by the Christian church. We don't have those same rules. And then they dole out all these things that you can and can't do, and it still tries to fit you into a box. I think we would become a lot more free as a society if we understood that you can express your spirituality in an individual way, as long as you understand that it doesn't make you superior. You don't have a superpower. You're not this like supernatural being. You're actually very natural when you are in tune with your spiritual self, and also grounded in reality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh my God. Just like you were saying, talking this whole time, and you said so many things I wanted to know that. I was like, oh my God. Okay. So first thing, starseed is a Nazi term, and we need to be very careful about using it. I'm not going to get into it, but definitely take some time to look into it. It is part of that pipeline to try to pull people into that. They're like, you're starseed, you're an alien. Anytime I see alien or starseed, those are red flags for me about people that are currently in that pipeline, because those are, I wouldn't call them dog whistles, but they're something similar, right? That are being used and misused to pull people in with the spirituality lens. But when you talk about like how, you know, to continuing to perpetuate supremacy culture and supremacy rhetoric, by saying that the pyramids were built by aliens. No, they were built by Africans. But you want to discredit that entire culture and entire civilization, and you cannot fathom that there were several civilizations that were way more advanced than us existing long before we ever, you know, we've lost that history, but we want to try to attribute it to something supernatural. So anytime that people say things like, I have a superpower, I'm an alien, I'm a starseed, those are all red flags. And take some time to look into it, because that is definitely like more than I can get into. But I did want to come back to something else you said, which is the trying to find the community. Oh, but I just lost my thought. I have lawnmowers, people out here, so I'm trying to speak when they're not near the window.
No worries, we can't hear them.
Yeah. What was my thought? This is part of like the ADHD, right? Like I get lost mid-sentence sometimes when I'm in the middle of talking about something. But I guess it'll come back to me later. It's just really frustrating to see people who are, it was the objectivity versus subjectivity. There is no such thing as objectivity. You can only perceive the world through your brain. So that rhetoric of objectivity is also part of supremacy culture that is baked into science. And if you look into the history of what the sciences is and how it came to be, it was all affluent white males or affluent people of whatever country or culture they were coming from that had, you know, using exploitative practices to do the things that they're doing and have the freedom to explore these things. But they were exploring it. And the, you know, a lot of the people that I know who are scientists are the most religious or spiritual people because they're in search of God. They are in search of understanding of our universe. And when you get down to the quantum level, there's just so many things that, of our understanding that breaks down as far as what is reality, what is even solid. You know, what is, you know, you could say that this is real, the things that are real exist in the world. But if you get it down into the atoms of this particular book that I'm holding in my hand, it's nothing but empty space when you're talking about quantum physics. So it just starts to break down. The reality is that we don't understand everything. We're still in the dark ages of medicine. We're still at the beginning stages of understanding ourselves as human beings and our brains and our neurodiversity, our, you know, medical sciences and all of the things that all of the rhetoric and things that we think we understand and know are probably going to be all debunked in 100 years. So think about that when you're trying to think about this is objective, this is hard truth. And there are things that are true. It's not to say that there aren't things that are true. Like supremacy culture is real. People are trying to kill us. People are actively creating systems and perpetuating systems of oppression to eliminate us, which is everything. Everything leads back to eugenics. Everything leads back to racism, right? And so anything that you're thinking about, frustrated with, anything that triggers you, you have to come back and say, who benefits from me believing that? Who benefits from me being triggered by that? And is this something that I actually need to address as trauma? Or is this something that I'm actually being abused by? And like getting down into that deconstruction lens, which is why it's so important to have a variety of voices. And I don't mean a variety of voices like go spend time with people who are on the far right and spouting neo-Nazi bullshit, right? Like that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is be in community with other people of other cultures and talk to them about what their ancestors understood about the world and how that fits into the reality that we live in today and how we can dream and imagine how we can get to a world where we can coexist with each other, no matter how different our belief systems are, right? Because we can be Catholic, we can be Christian, we can be Muslim, we can be any, many, many, many religions and still coexist, expecting that we all just treat each other with respect, love, and human decency. But what that means to people in certain places means for me to be respecting you as a human is to demoralize you and strip everything away from you that is who you are because I need you to fit into my box.
Oh, yes, girl. Okay, I need to gather my thoughts because I'm like... I'm so excited. Like, this has been what keeps us the at the crux of it all is, like you said earlier, everyone is their own individual universe. And we do really live in a multiverse, right? But what happens is when we are stuck in this very individualistic thing, like my beliefs are my truth. And therefore, if you don't believe what I believe, then you are my enemy, has kept so many of us fighting. Like, there have been literal religious wars, wars fought over religion. People fought and died because someone else wouldn't submit to their way of expressing their spirituality. There is no one way to be. There is no one way to express ourselves as humans. And I've said this before, if there was supposed to be just one way that we all were supposed to be, then the vast majority of us would have been born that way. We would have been born looking that way. We would have been born thinking that way. And there would only be a few natural anomalies that would occur over time. But instead, it's the exact opposite. We are all varied in our expressions, both internally and externally. We're all varied in our ways that we perceive the world. And that is what we should be embracing. But unfortunately, because of colonization, we've all been conditioned to believe that this one thing, white cishet affluent male culture, is the way to be. And because of that, and then it also became Christian, white male supremacy or whatever, that if this is the way that we're all supposed to be, I am going to do whatever I can to get myself closer to this goal. And it doesn't matter what happens to the next person. It doesn't matter. And so this is why we've moved so far away from community, and we continue to fight, and we see people that don't align with our personal worldview as our enemy, as opposed to just being like, okay, this is another human being who sees things differently. And just because I don't agree with them doesn't mean that they're less valid as a person. Doesn't mean that they don't have the right to express themselves in that way. Because at the end of the day, especially if we look at like religion, at the end of the day, there's so many things that are common across religions than they are different. Most of the differences in religions are the cultural expressions of their tenets, not the core tenets themselves. Like if you look at Islam, if you look at Buddhism, if you look at Christianity and Hinduism, a lot of the core teachings are the same, but the way they are expressed are different based on the culture that they were birthed in. But so many people keep looking at the surface. They keep saying, oh, well, this person wears a hijab and they speak a different language. They're wrong. Like, we're all human beings at our base level. And what connects us is that we all have the same basic needs and rights to existence. But we keep focusing on the things that don't actually matter, which are, you know, how we choose to express ourselves, if we choose to worship, how we worship. It really frustrates me, because whenever I've tried to say this thing or I've seen other people try to explain this, we get immediately dismissed as pie in the sky. It always makes me think of back in 2016 with Bernie Sanders, right? He was literally trying, all he was doing was saying, hey, you guys on the right and you guys on the left, you realize we have the same enemy, right? You realize that it's the people at the top, it's the 1% that keeps both of you suppressed. And that made so much sense to me. I was never into politics until he came along. And I was like, wow, you're completely right. And so then I was campaigning for him. And when I was like talking to people about Bernie Sanders, so it didn't matter if they were Black, white, Hispanic, Asian, didn't matter. They all came in with the same thing. Like, yeah, I mean, that sounds good, but he's never going to win. Or yeah, he may be saying this, but I don't think that me, someone from Camden, New Jersey, the most dangerous city in the country, has something in common with someone from rural West Virginia or something like that. It's like, but that's only because you're looking on the surface. If you look at the ways that we all struggle, you can come back to the same conclusion that we have a common enemy that's not each other. But that doesn't serve a capitalist system. It doesn't serve a white supremacist system. There always has to be somebody at the top, and they get there by suppressing and oppressing everyone else to get there. And then they keep us in a scarcity mindset so that we're fighting with each other as opposed to coming together and fighting the 1% of people who are making life miserable for the 99% of us.
Mm-hmm. But it's all by design, right? This has been designed and working as designed for a very, very long time. It's just that now we have the ability to connect and communicate with people, a lot of people, in less time. Right? Because it's not just the internet. The internet has been around for a while, but until TikTok came around and made it very accessible to contact and integrate so many different ideas and so many people in short periods of time, everyone's like, oh, our attention spans are shortening. No, our processing is speeding up. right? Our ability to process and engage and interact with many conversations at the same time, rather than having one national conversation, we're having 50 national conversations, and people are starting to see that the systems are set up to constantly be pitting us against each other, keeping us exhausted, all of these things. But you know why? It's because of childism. The truth is that they use children as a shield. Oh, think of the children and clutch your pearls. But you don't think of children as human beings. You think of them as property. You think of them as clay that you can mold, and not something that is inherently born being themselves the second they're out of the womb. In fact, before they're out of the womb, right? And so when you come into the world and you're trying to shape and mold, you're teaching them, but they're going to be and do and learn what they're going to be and do and learn. And there's no amount of shaping that's going to change that, right? They tried to beat my resistance out of me. It never went away. Yeah. You know, it made me stronger. Well, it didn't make me stronger, but like, but it made me willing, or it made me fight. It made me fight for my life, because that's what I was doing. And until we really truly accept that, when people are saying we're doing this for the children, that's not the truth. We know that's not the truth. You're not doing this for the children. You're doing this so that you can continue to use children as slaves.
Ooh, girl, I swear, every time I hear a politician use that, try to use children as a shield, I could roll my eyes so hard they'll fall out of my head. Because it's like, and I never thought I would get to to bring up this on my podcast, but here we go. Like, gun control in this country, right? Anytime, especially someone on the right, they're always talking about, we're doing this for the kids, especially when they talk about abortion bans. You don't actually care about kids, because if you did, you would have tighter gun regulation, and you would have universal health care.
You wouldn't be bringing back child labor laws. You wouldn't be bringing back pedophilia, which is essentially what you're trying to do, lowering the marriage age and raising the voting age. Like, come on. You think we're blind? We're not blind. We just didn't have access to connecting to each other like we did before. So people have more power than they realize, but they didn't have the communication, and they didn't have the people. And the people who were here doing these things, they killed them all, right? Mm-hmm. All assassinated.
Yeah. Girl, I was so afraid for Bernie Sanders' life when he was, you know, campaigning. And I see it like, and it makes me sad, and I don't want to go too much into it, but I got really depressed when I saw what happened to him in 2020. Because I'm like, wow, like, they didn't even try to make it look like it wasn't an obvious ploy to make him seem like to try to delegitimize his campaign. They literally all came together and stood behind Biden so that everyone else, because of groupthink and hierarchical think, would see this and be like, oh, well, I guess if they're saying this, then he doesn't have a chance. And again, that's just their way to keep us. Exactly. But that's also what they do to keep everyone like desperate and feeling like we only have a choice between these two different parties or these two different things. And it's like, by keeping people desperate and ill-informed, that's the only way that they could keep this system perpetuated. And that's why they're trying to attack education. They're trying to attack things like TikTok, because the more educated we are, the more you understand that, oh, you have the ability to think critically, and as opposed to just going with the flow. And then that's more people questioning the system, and they can't have that, because as soon as we start to question it, it won't stand very long, because it's a house of cards anyway.
Right. You said critical thinking, and it reminded me, like, people throw that word around, and not to say that you're doing this, but people throw that word around and don't really understand that we're not taught how to critically think. I wasn't taught how to think critically until I got into college. And at that, like, third or fourth year, right? Like, those skills, they're philosophical skills that aren't taught to us. And the logic loops that have to happen, and okay, you know, build a diagram and think through yes, no, you know, all of these things have to happen, have to be taught. Just like autistic people need to be taught what facial expressions mean, everyone needs to be taught what critical thinking means and how it works and how you apply it to anything and everything, right? When you're making a decision about how to load your dishwasher, that's critical thinking. But we don't apply the same thing, the same logics, to our belief systems, to our religions, to our spirituality, because we're taught that those things are not related. And that's not true. It's just that we haven't been taught how to. And then when we're searching for the people to teach us, we end up in how many pipelines, how many systems, almost all of the systems, if not all of the systems, are already set up to pull you into supremacy culture, to perpetuate it. Everything is set up to keep you in this system.
Absolutely.
So you fight and you resist and you get exhausted because every single thing I decide is something that is resistance.
Absolutely. And when I hear people talk about like they're trying to indoctrinate our kids and they're too woke, it's so funny to me because like that just shows me that they're projecting onto us to try to shame us out of thinking critically. Like our systems are basically indoctrination. Not basically, they are indoctrination. They teach you rote memorization and they do not teach you how to think critically. Like you are to come to class, you are to sit down and do this. And then after you go through that, you are to go to work, you are to listen to your boss and you're supposed to do this. And then anytime you are someone who challenges the system, you will be shamed and demonized and disciplined as a way to get you out and also discourage other people from following in your footsteps. And that is literally the only thing that continues this. And so what they do is they try to call critical thinking and thinking outside of the paradigm as indoctrination. Like they say, these books are trying to indoctrinate our kids, or TikTok is indoctrinating our kids. When in reality, it's doing the exact opposite. It's presenting them with alternate perspectives, challenging their beliefs and the things that they were indoctrinated to believe their entire lives to help them think critically. And I wish more people would understand that, but guilt, shame, and fear are the three main weapons and tools used by a white supremacist colonial culture to keep people compliant. Because if we can make you feel guilty about not following the rules or not just blindly complying, if we can shame you for it, and if we can make you afraid for your safety, then you are going to be less likely to rebel. You're going to be less likely to walk away from the system because you feel the guilt, you feel the shame, and you feel the fear. As soon as they lose that grip on people, as soon as you start to move from a place of, no, I'm not going to be afraid of walking away from this, or you're not going to guilt or shame me into being out of being an individual. And you start to move with love and compassion, like the exact opposite. That's when you can really, truly break free. But I feel like we need to have that happen on a mass level. It's really still an individual process. The few people who are doing the healing and are working on themselves and are able to see outside of their paradigms, we're here, but we're facing a centuries old system that so many people just like have bought into that is going back to, like, I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall, and I don't care how crazy I look to some people. The crazier I look to you, the more I know that you got your head stuck in the sand. And, but yeah, and then my sense of justice is like, I just want everybody to, it's kind of like, I forget who it was that I was talking to about this, when they used the Mean Girls, that scene in Mean Girls, like, she doesn't even go here. When she was talking about, I just wish everyone could eat cake and rainbows and have fun. That's really me. I'm just like, I just want everybody to get along. I just want everyone to be able to eat cake. But then there's always somebody that's like, well, she doesn't even go here. Like, get her out. Like, she's like crazy. And I really feel like that's right. A perfect analogy for how it feels when you're like trying to share this information with people.
Exactly. And they use the words that we use to expose them, to try to discredit us from exposing them for the thing that they're doing. They're indoctrinating. So they say, we are indoctrinating the kids. Well, you know what? If you teach a child to be afraid, a child just wants love, nurturing. They need to be taken care of. And if you withhold that from them with fear and judgment and shame and guilt and all of these things, then you are indoctrinating them into believing these things and self-policing so that they do this to themselves and continue to perpetuate these systems, so that then you don't have to exert any more effort to get your child to do the thing that you want them to do, instead of letting them be the person that they want to be and ask the questions, right? So if you internalize this, and we have an entire planet full of people who have dealt with colonization in one way or the other, they're all traumatized and they're all dealing with that internal police and then turning around and projecting that police out to others because that's what was done to them. And so that's what they think is the reality of the world. And we are in a world where we can't explain to them that this is not how we need to treat each other. They've been in this too long. Not to say that they can't understand and come out of it, but they're not even open to listening, right? They're not even open to having that conversation because they're still like, oh, you're just trying to control us. When in fact, all we're saying is we just want to live. Stop trying to control us to be like you.
Abso-frickin-lutely. Woo! Girl, I am like, yeah. Yeah, I'm not even going to expand on that. Because you said it perfectly. Because we could go on and on and on about this.
On and on.
And actually, I would love to. I would love to talk about this again.
Absolutely.
But you know what? Before we wrap.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, this is one conversation. This is not a thing that happens one time and then go, right? This is how we build the world of the future. But go ahead.
No, I completely agree. But what I was going to say, I was like, before we go, I want to actually touch on some of the things that you're doing. Because I know earlier I was saying, when I introduced you, I said you founded the Neural Spicy Network. But I want you to tell us more about what that is, because I know it plays into the conversation we were just having about community. And I really would love for you to expand on that.
Absolutely. And just to keep my thoughts in order, I'll go chronologically. So once I found out I was neurodivergent and I started looking online, finding people in community, I was like on TikTok and I was like, hey, I need to talk to these people, not just watch their content and make comments. Like, I need to talk to you. So I was trying to reach out to people. That is my purpose on TikTok, is to reach out to people, connect with people, because I am at home. I'm still taking COVID seriously. I don't really leave the house. When I do, I'm masked, and I'm very careful and intentional about what I do because I don't want to get even further disabled. The society is already keeping me disabled, right? The social model of disability and whatnot. But in that process, I realized a lot of people don't know, neurodivergent people don't know how to network. And I was still learning how to network. I still am. And I was just like, let me make a LinkedIn group for people who are looking for work from home jobs, because I figured out how to do it. Let me share that knowledge. And let me share it to the neurodivergent people who are afraid to network because they don't know, they don't want to reach out. Reaching out is scary because we've been beaten down so much by life and society that we're just like, that's the scariest thing, is to reach out to a stranger because you don't know if you're safe. So trying to create a safe space is what I started the Neurospicy networking group on LinkedIn. And that is where people who are neuroaffirming can join and ask questions. It's a closed group, so anything you post there is not going to be shown to your employer. If your coworkers are on LinkedIn, they're not going to see it. And you can share and be part of this group and talk to each other about, you know, sharing links, sharing events, sharing, asking questions. One of the ones I saw was, how do I tell my employer that I need accessibility? Like, what's the process? Are any links? And we shared I think it's jan.org, although I have to look back and check if that's right. But a couple of places that, sharing resources and having a space. And even learning what that is. So I'm still trying to work through that. Of course, I still have my full-time day job and all of the other projects I'm part of. So trying to manage my time and my spoons across all these projects is a challenge. Even coming today, I was like exhausted and not interested. Like, I was just like, I'm showing up even though I'm not fully here. But having conversation always energizes me, which is why I know, like, I love to do this. The more interactions I have with people, the more I realize, like, I love to talk to people. I'm not an introvert. I thought I was for the longest time. But side note, introvert and extroversion is not about how you present to the world. It's about how you recharge your batteries. Mm. So I'm actually an ambivert, I think, a little bit of both. If you're alone, if you charge your batteries alone, you're an introvert. If you charge your batteries around people, you're an extrovert. And then ambivert, like in the middle, kind of a little bit of both. But anywho, another one of the projects... Another one of the things that I did when I was on TikTok is I found Calling Up Justice, and I joined that collective, and I've been supporting them in a bunch of different ways and trying to network with more people, just like find more people, do social justice work, find out what they're doing, collaborate on different projects. Like, it's such an interesting and amazing group, and I love that I'm part of it, and I want to see more happen there too. So and then trying to do it again in a COVID safe way. That's the hardest part right now, is that everybody's going back to normal and then we're losing our access to funding and ways to find funding because we can't, because everyone wants this in person and we don't feel safe in person. So there's just a lot of things that are limiting us and keeping us back, which is the same thing for the One Free Community. One Free Community is a group that I founded with a bunch of neurodivergent femme presenting people, and we decided that we needed a space that was going to center the most marginalized people. So, you know, I kept joining neurodivergent groups, either on Discord, LinkedIn, and all of these other places, and they were so white because other people of color would show up, feel the toxicity, and then turn around and leave. And when they brought it up, they were shamed and pushed out. So then why am I going to stay in that? We left. And so it's causing more segregation because it's like creating a space where I can only be safe around my people. But that's not even true either, right? Because it can be, if I went to a Hispanic only group, I'm still going to be dealing with misogyny, colorism, and a bunch of other patriarchal and colonialist ideals. So I was just like, how do we, you know, when you can't find it, you make it. That's what ends up happening with every neurodivergent person, right? When I can't find the thing I need, I'm going to go figure out how to make it myself. So that's what we did. We created a group where people of the global majority led, neurodivergent, disabled, trans-affirming, queer online community center. And our goal is to create a mutual aid app to help people find resources, whether that's physical resources or digital resources or friendships. It's all part of mutual aid. And as part of that, I am trying to network all of these groups. There's amazing organizations all over the country, all over the world doing amazing things, but we're not communicating with each other and sharing our resources with each other. So when we start to do that, that's when we really start to gain our power back. And so part of my mission with One Free Community and all of the other projects that I'm on is to continue to network us together and get us sharing and pooling our knowledge and resources. Every time I get in a room with other neurodivergent people, I learn something else and I affirm another part of me and another piece of my experience that I was like, oh, that's not just me. I'm not alone in the world. I'm not the, because until I found out I was autistic, I was literally the only person on the planet who was like me. Mm-hmm. And now I can find community.
Oh, I love that. Oh my God, Jacinia, thank you so freaking much for what you do, for this conversation, for just showing up and being you. Like, I don't even, yeah, thank you so much. I mean, This is something that we desperately need, not just as neurodivergent people, but as people in general. And by standing up and taking the reins and seeing the need and knowing and taking it upon yourself to try to help fill that need, firstly, is a very autistic thing to do, is to like think of others and think of ways that you can help others. But in doing that, it's my hope that more people will join you in that endeavor, especially with One Free Community. Because you're exactly right. There are so many different little pockets of people doing the same thing. And we don't need to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes you just need to secure the cogs together so that we're all rolling mm-hmm. in the same direction. And that's what it sounds like you're trying to do with One Free Community and also with the NeuroSpicy Network, because networking for NeuroSpicy people is just very difficult. It's all very important work that I just want to thank you for doing and for sharing your story with us too.
Thank you. Thank you for having this podcast. Thank you for everything you do and sharing our voices, because there are not enough people talking about this, especially as people of color in the autistic community. There's so many issues we could have talked about. There's so many things that we could talk about just specifically on one or two things that we just can't do that, right? We are all over the place. That spider web, that neural network, you know, that's what we're trying to build. You know, we're trying to build networks everywhere. That's all it is connecting all of the synapses together.
Yes, our systems-based thinking could coupled with ADHD, has the conversation bouncing all over the place. But I loved it, and I will most definitely have you on again, because I truly enjoy talking to you. I truly enjoy your perspective, and it's much needed. We need more varied representation across the spectrum that is not just autism, but our human existence. We need our voices out there. So again, thank you so much, Jesenia. And thank you guys for stopping by. I really hope that you enjoyed this conversation, and make sure you check out NeuroSpicy Network on LinkedIn, as well as follow Jesenia. It's at NeuroSpicy Network on TikTok, right?
NeuroSpicy Networking.
NeuroSpicy Networking on TikTok. And all the links where you can find her are going to be in the description. Thank you again, girly. I want to thank you guys once again for stopping by and spending a little bit of time with me today. I really hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you did, make sure you leave a comment. Let me know what you think. Be sure to follow my guest, Jesenia. All of the links where you can find her and the work that she's doing will be in the description. And if you aren't already, make sure you're following me at Deconstructing Neuro on Instagram and TikTok, and at Decon_Neuro on Twitter. You can also follow my personal pages at T Jamaica Pogue, and make sure you drop by my personal website, tjamaicapogue.com, and see some of the projects that I'm up to, and also get a little bit of behind the scenes of one of my biggest special interests, which is travel. I love you guys. Thank you again, and until next time.